Glory to Jesus Christ! Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish presents Light of the East, a program revealing how the Eastern Catholic Churches have nourished the Roman Catholic Churches and today's world in profound ways through their histories, traditions, mysteries, and spirituality. Hello, I am Father Thomas J. Loya, pastor of Annunciation of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois, and this is a story of the Eastern Churches, an inspiring story of faith, courage, intrigue, mystery, spirituality, dissension, and reconciliation. But most of all, this is an expression of a great experience of faith through our unique divine liturgy. Join with me now as we look toward the Light of the East.
Light of the East is also underwritten by a grant from the charitable Koch Foundation, whose vision is to strengthen and propagate the Catholic faith by providing grant support for a wide variety of evangelization efforts. Learn more at KochFoundation.org. Koch spelled K-O-C-H. And Light of the East is also supported by Eastern Christian Publications, where you can find the prayers of the Catholic Byzantine Daily Office at ecpubs.com and easternchristianmedia.com. A broadband network. For you to learn more about the Eastern Catholic Churches, that's easternchristianpublications.com.
Glory to Jesus Christ. Welcome to Light of the East. I am Father Thomas Loyal, your host. I'm sure that at this time of year, many of you, if not all, have had the experience of enjoying nature in many ways. And many times it is absolutely awesome. And many of you maybe go for walks in the woods, the fields, and so on. Maybe going on vacations to faraway places. Maybe you wanted to see the Grand Canyon and so on. And in all these experiences, you marvel the beauty of creation, and you probably feel closer to God. It's very common. It's very natural. But there's actually a lot more to that experience, and it needs to happen more often. Because that experience that you might have known in a moment, a day, a vacation, is actually part of what we've talked about in this program over and over again. That's one of our messages. It's something we call the sacramental worldview. And it's one of the hallmarks, one of the gifts of Eastern Christian spirituality, which is what this program is about. And what it means basically is the ability to see at all times and everything, certainly in God's creation, how something points to, participates in, reveals God. It's like having one foot on this earth and one foot in heaven, but seeing that all the time, and here's the important part, living according to that vision. If we see sacramentally, we necessarily must live sacramentally, which changes everything for us. It can even change the world. It changes the way we even raise our children, the way our marriages are, our family, the workplace, everything. And just to let you know how deep and important this is, we have a special guest today who wrote a marvelous book about his experience and communicating that experience of what I would call here at Light of the East, the sacramental worldview through nature. The name of the book is called Landscapes of Grace, Hiking, Faith, and Finding Yourself in the Wild. And the author is Jeff Gardner. He is actually a longtime friend here of Light of the East, but he called me and told me about his book. And I said, Jeff, that book sounds exactly like the message, the basic message of our program here, Light of the East, living the sacramental worldview. Jeff, welcome to Light of the East.
Oh, thank you, Father. It is fantastic to be here.
Jeff, tell us, first of all, why you wrote this book. Like, what is the background of it? Do you go out hiking a lot? Are you an outdoorsman?
I do. I spend a lot of time in wild spaces, even when I'm indoors, as a writer. Actually, I spend most of my time daydreaming about being outside. I think one of my favorite mantras is, even a bad day on trail beats a good day in the office. But the reason that I wrote the book is it's become clearer and clearer to me that in terms of our relationship between ourselves, the space that we inhabit in this material world, and God, that we're out of balance. Now, you know, the very term, the very word balance implies that there's adjustments. It's sort of like making adjustments as you steer your car. But we are particularly out of balance at this time and place between two spaces that we inhabit simultaneously. And I discuss this in the book. That is, you know, take the name from the proposition that we live in this material world simultaneously in two landscapes, exterior landscapes and interior landscapes. Now, the exterior landscapes are the spaces that we move through, whether it's in our house or outside. Interior landscapes, these are the spaces within us, and their grooves, their contours are formed by the answers to such basic questions that are posed to all of us, as such as, who am I and why am I here? And these two places that we inhabit, that they are tremendously dependent upon each other. That is, the one influences the other. But I think, you know, we can agree, and it's very clear to me, that in the 20th century West, 21st century West, we are in a period of crisis. Not only do we seem to be having tremendous difficulty finding these fundamental answers to these fundamental questions of who I am, but why are we here? But we're also at a point in which we have narrowed our focus in terms of how we look at ourselves in the world, that we've stopped asking or stopped answering these questions in a way that can lead us to answers. And why is that? Well, one of the reasons is that we have substituted or even, you know, predominantly put in place of our view of the external world, a screen view. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, and I write in the book that I believe it, our salvation depends on us reconnecting to the landscapes outside to connect us inside. And I'm not suggesting that screens are the portal to hell. That's not, you know, what I'm putting forward. But rather, what I am suggesting, and I do believe, is that screens are significantly, they're a seductive siren song call to do nothing of importance and to stop asking the essential questions of importance. That is, why are we here? What is our vocation? Why has God put us on this earth? And what does he want us to do? And so I wrote this book as a, you know, not just a statement of saying, hey, I think we've got a serious problem, because I think that's something that a lot of people are saying, but as a proposition, what can we do as a simple solution to reverse this imbalance?
And this book, Jeff, is actually kind of autobiographical. It's essays of your own experience of being an outdoorsman and taking others with you, your sons and so on. And it's, like I said at the beginning, it's more than just, oh, wasn't that a beautiful landscape? Isn't God wonderful? Yeah, that's true. We all can experience this to some extent. But it goes deeper than that, because you even write about things like, you say there's a crisis of comfort. You take these experiences of the outdoors and you talk about how they are crucial to raising children.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's sort of, you know, like the old joke, there are two young fish swimming along and they meet an old wise fish, and the old wise fish says, hey boys, how's the water? And then the two young fish look at each other and they say, what's water? I don't think that, you know, growing up in something as I did, in which being outside and being active and not being held captive by a screen was something we fully understood the benefit of until we were out of it, until we were in a place like we are now, in which so many children and adults spend something on the order of 95 to 98% of their time indoors and screen bound. And the effects of that on our physical health, on our mental and our spiritual health, they all point in the direction of bad. You know, that's not good.
And this is even scientifically shown.
Absolutely. The data is clear, wide, and deep. This is just not good for us.
We have two powerful terms that have emerged from this. One is they're victims of videophilia, which results in nature deficit disorder.
Right, right. And you know, we simply were not designed. I mean, God did not make us to sit indoors and stare at a screen. Unfortunately, the economy that we've crafted demands that we do a lot of that. And so, you know, as I argue in the book, we're now at a time and a place, in particular to Western civilization, where we must make it a priority. We're at a time and a place in which it is imperative that we approach our use of the screen and technology as an ascetic. That is, we conscientiously limit how much of it we use and how much of our time and ourself that we give it.
In your book, you say this: "Let me suggest that if we want to do something good for our children, we should start by throwing them out of the house and leaving them alone."
You know, exactly. And I think for many of us, and I know you and I, Father, have talked about this, this was the default when we were children.
Yes.
That our parents would say, you know, get out of the house. And I, you know, we didn't come back in until it was dark or dinner time or and then even after that, we even slept outside.
Yes, me too, yeah.
Most of the time. So again, I simply, you know, the speed at which our daily lives and our activities, and especially the lives and activities of our children, have been subsumed by screens and digital technology is breathtaking. You know, we are now reaching a point in which we have so much, you know, what's called information, but it's really not. And most of it's just factoid thrown at us by corporate interests that we are voluntarily, we're willingly surrendering that filter, like, should I look at this or should I not look at this, over to artificial intelligence, that is to AI. And there's an irony there that I find particularly unsettling. And that is, we've reached a point in which the digital robots are generating so much information that we are now creating more digital robots to filter that information. And that to me seems like a form of madness.
Mm.
It seems much more sensical to just say, stop.
Yeah.
Okay. Just step away. And most of it, you know, if we take a hard and honest look at what it is we spend our time with on a screen, most of it, and I would argue anywhere upwards of 50% to 80%, is absolutely not necessary. It's not necessary for our work. It's not necessary for our lives, for our relationships. And we would be much, much better off spending time together, spending time outside in a natural environment, as God has designed us to do.
The book is called Landscapes of Grace: Hiking, Faith, and Finding Yourself in the Wild, by Jeff Gardner, our special guest today and good friend of Light of the East for many years. When we come back, we're going to talk more about his really fascinating, beautifully written, easy to read, and insightful book. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
I'm Bishop Robert Pipta of the Byzantine Catholic Eparchy of Parma, and you are listening to our very own Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
Welcome back to Light of the East. I am Father Thomas Loyal, your host, with a special guest and good friend of ours, Jeff Gardner, author of Landscapes of Grace: Hiking, Faith, Finding Herself in the Wild, a book that I am presenting here because it's a wonderful, easy-to-read book that so illustrates from an, if you want to call it, existential point of view. In other words, a lived experience of the author, Jeff, and others with him who he's taken on outings in the wilderness and so on. It's an existential, concrete, personal witness of what it really means to so-called find God in nature and how important and crucial that is. And Jeff, one of the things that you mention in the book is a very strong point, and I was glad to see that, because as a priest and pastor who works with people and it works with them in raising their children and so on, I find that what's happening today among parents is there's this sense that it's almost like parents today believe that their children should experience no displeasure or nothing that's sort of dangerous or risky. And you make a great point about that in relation to experience of nature.
Absolutely. And I think not just for our children, for ourselves. You know, we have to remember that we do not arrive at meaningful answers that have, you know, staying power without struggle. And, you know, we learn by doing. I mean, I've been a teacher for 40 years. And, you know, we learn by doing something, and it's through a process of extension. That is, we learn a particular lesson or habit doing this one thing, and then we extend it into the rest of our lives. And so when we take out hardship, when we take out difficulty, when we take out suffering, we then have a very, very difficult time learning how to, say, live a good Christian moral life, because that requires sacrifice and suffering. How to model that for our children? You know, we live in a convenience culture that it from the information that's delivered to us to the food that's presented to us that seeks to tell us what's best for us is what's easiest for us, convenient for us, and, you know, almost quite literally every second of the day. That you needn't think about anything. There'll be an app for that. You needn't worry about how you're going to prepare food. There's a drive-through for that. And what we're seeing quite clearly is that this hyperabundance of comfort is harming us. It's harming us physically. It's harming us mentally. It's harming us spiritually. You know, not only do we have a obesity and related health epidemic, both among children and adults, but this generation of children, this generation of children coming out of middle and high school, is the first generation of children to score lower on cognitive aptitude and IQ tests than subsequent generations in the history since we've been tracking this. And all fingers are pointing towards the hyperabundance of comfort and convenience that have been built into every single little teeny corner of our lives. And it's just not good.
And like Francis used to say here, if a child, this I'm reading from your book, if a child or anyone for that matter can restart an unpleasant experience, as in a computer game, as soon as he or she does not like its progress, they are not likely to learn how to navigate unpleasant situations or to avoid disadvantageous contests in the first place.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is not to minimize legitimate concerns over mental health issues, psychological issues. But we have to ask ourselves, I mean, what's happened? Is it that suddenly there's been this, you know, strange, unexplained genetic shift, and all of us have gone psychologically off of not, maybe not the deep end, but at least the middle deep end? Or could it be that we have over-comfortized, as I say in the book, and sort of hypersensitized all of us, starting with our children? The, you know, the mental, the counseling industry has exploded. The medication industry has exploded. I mean, we're talking about increases of 200 to 300 to 400 to 500 fold.
Yes.
I don't believe that, say, between now in the first quarter, you know, as we wind up the first quarter of the 21st century, and say 50 years ago, that we have this tremendous genetic shift in which somehow our minds just don't work anymore. It is the habits that we have acquired. And you know, the central culprit is the habit of comfort.
In your book, Jeff, you give the account of how you fell for the age-old snipe hunting trick. However, you learned a couple things from that.
I did. In the book, I tell the story of how my father took me out for a snipe hunt. And for those that don't know, a snipe is an actual bird. But a snipe hunt has nothing to do with catching the bird. It's a ruse. It's a lesson for young boys. And they would take us out in the woods right at about sunset, put us in a spot and say, okay, now sit here and wait for the snipe to come along, and then you grab it. And then they would walk back to camp. Now, the purpose of the snipe hunt was not to catch a snipe, but rather to leave us in what I call controlled peril, to let us, for ourselves, figure out, you know, how did I get to this spot, and then how do I get back to camp? And as I mentioned in the book, I'm not necessarily advocating that everybody take their children out and leave them in the woods. I'm not necessarily discouraging it either, but it taught me two very valuable lessons. Number one, I could get myself out of a situation that I found myself in unexpectedly when I was alone. And then number two, it taught me to be skeptical when somebody suggested that I do something that ran contrary to everything I knew that we normally did. We never, for instance, hunted at night. That was just a given. We never hunted using pillowcases, which is how a snipe hunt works. And I didn't understand it at the time, and I did find my way back to camp, as you'll read in the book. And my father, you know, who was watching me very closely, I didn't necessarily know where our camp was, but he knew where I was. He asked me, well, did you catch any snipe? And I said, you know, no, you know, feeling like I had failed. And I could tell from the wily smile on his face that there was something else that I was supposed to catch on to that was central to the snipe hunt that had nothing to do with this animal. You know, something that, in terms of a lesson that I didn't learn until, didn't realize, I should say, until many years later.
Mm-hmm. Before getting further, Jeff, where and how can people get your book? Again, it's called Landscapes of Grace, Hiking, Faith, and Finding Yourself in the Wild by Jeff Gardner.
Yeah, you can find it on Amazon if you just type in the title, Landscapes of Grace, Hiking, Faith, and Finding Yourself in the Wild. Or you can come to my website, which is Jeff Gardner, and that's GARDNER.online, not .com or .org, jeffgardner.online.
Speaking of the title of your book, Hiking, Faith, and Finding Yourself in the Wild, Jeff, people will oftentimes say, and you said in your book, of course, you find God, you certainly experience God in nature, in the wilderness, especially when we really go out there as deeply as you have, but also finding yourself, learning about yourself. Can you tell us about that?
Yep. And I make a very important distinction, which I think is crucial to keep in mind in the book. That is, nature, the reason that it connects us to God is not that nature is God. Nature is not God. Mm-hmm. We read this of Elijah, that there was a earthquake, but God was not the earthquake. There was a fire, but God was not the fire. Rather, nature is an example of a system created by God that works in accordance with its function. And that, to me, again, is one of our central problems. We are out of sync with our designed function. I mean, even to the point, and I, you know, with great sympathy, I look at young people who now can't even identify with their own basic biology. As infuriating and ridiculous as some of the manifestations of that can be within our culture, we should look at that and take note. So to go out into nature is to immerse ourselves in a system that works in accordance with its function. And we find this all throughout Scripture, both Old and New Testament. And if we observe this structure attentively, that is a absolute, you know, accessible to everybody means by which we can start asking ourselves and asking honestly, okay, what's my function? Why am I here in accordance with my design? What is it that, you know, as a unique creation, every single one of us has never existed before, nor will ever exist again? What is it that I am called to do? Why is it that I have been placed here?
In your book, you say this: this connection between living close to the land and a reverence for the workings of creation is so pronounced, so absolute, that I can write with certainty the following. The more time spent outside, the deeper our contemplation of God. And while I have no experiences that can legitimately be compared to those of people who live much closer to the land than I do, I was once given the privilege of participating in a ceremony that many cultures have used to connect who they are to the spaces that they live in.
Yeah, in that part of the book, I tell a story about how, as young boys, we were taken out, this was by our Boy Scout master back in the day when, you know, Boy Scouting was concerned with boys, not in an illicit way, and actual scouting.
Right.
We were taken out with members from the Cheyenne tribe, and we were given names grounded in how we behaved, that is, how we appeared to others. And as I write about in the book, that experience was so profound to me It was so instructive, both in terms of my strengths and weaknesses, that I've never forgotten it, nor have I ever divulged the entirety of the evening to anyone. But we used to have this. I mean, the connection between, say, wilderness and our faith in God and our religious character was part and parcel of the old world. And it was absolutely central to the new world, that is, to the growth of our country. And we have lost that.
Jeff, thanks so much for being here. Thanks so much for writing this book. And again, I really wanted people to know how and where they can find it.
Well, thank you, Father. Again, go to Amazon and simply type in the title, Landscapes of Grace, Hiking Faith and Finding Yourself in the Wild. Or I encourage you to come to my website, jeffgardner.online, and sign up. I write and send out a little something about every week, jeffgardner.online.
And get out in nature, find God, find yourself. Thanks for listening. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
To hear Light of the East again, visit ByzantineCatholic.com and click on the Resources tab and on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening to Light of the East. We encourage you to tell a friend about Light of the East and to visit ByzantineCatholic.com. Light of the East is produced by ADC Media.
Thank you for listening. Next week, we will return to the Light of the East. To learn more about Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish, visit our website, ByzantineCatholic.com, where you will also find an archive of all of our programs. In order to continue Light of the East with its mission of Christianity's reunion, we need your support with a donation. Any amount will be a blessing. Please make out a check to Light of the East Radio and send it to Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. That's Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, spelled Will-Cook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Or donate online on the homepage of ByzantineCatholic.com. From the Light of the East, a new dawn of unity is in sight. God bless you, go with God, and may God grant you many happy years.